Welcome back to The Guardian with Joy and Holly Radio Show. Jenny Rose, Carly, moments away. But first, Simple Grow, product that doesn't smell, that will feed your plants and make your plants smile.
Are you worrying about your plant growth? Provide your plants with what they need to grow to their potential. Simple Grow offers 100% organic worm castings at simplegrow.com. Unlike other worm casting products, when you order from Simple Grow, you are getting 100% worm casting, not filler plus castings. You can promote ideal soil structure and aeration with Simple Grow's all-natural and odor-free worm castings. There's only one ingredient, worm castings. No chemicals or additives will seep into your food, and it doesn't smell like other fertilizers. For indoor and outdoor use, you can buy by the bag, bundle, ton, or truckload. Check out what Simple Grow 100% worm castings can do for your plants and order today at simplegrow.com.
Well, Holly, let's go to the Proclamation Hotline, brought to you by Proclamation Goods, and bring in our guest for this week.
Jenny Rose Carey is a renowned gardener, educator, historian, and author. Jenny Rose has been lecturing nationally and internationally for many years. She also has gardened in both England and in the U.S. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're very happy to have you on the program, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country.
Oh, well, thank you.
So you have a book called Glorious Shade, where you encourage people to embrace the shadier areas of their gardens. What are some helpful tips or ideas for people who are new to the idea of growing in shade, or, you know, for the people who want to try more shade gardening?
Well, I named the book Glorious Shade because I do think that, you know, many people start with maybe gardening in sun. So maybe they're growing vegetables or annuals or something like that, like zinnias. And maybe don't quite get gardening in shade. So to me, shade gardening brings so many benefits. And I think during the pandemic, we found that lovely shaded places were maybe where it was best to hang out and sit up. The gorgeous foliage above and things like that. So when I set out to write the book, I realized that one of the first things people don't understand is how to gauge how much shade there is. So in the book, there's a whole chapter about how to tell whether it's full shade or part shade, which I define as 2 to 6 hours. And then, you know, looking at the time of day when it's shaded, because if it's shaded in the afternoon, you can grow a lot more things that maybe wouldn't dry out in that hot afternoon sun. So it really just goes through looking at the amount of shade and maybe adjusting it if you're not happy with, if you have too much shade, maybe working out how to either trim some hedges back or, you know, get a little more dappled light in there. So that's really the first thing. And then the second one is looking at the soil, because under a tree, I don't know if you've ever noticed in a rainstorm, but the tree acts not only as a parasol and shading you from the sun, but it often acts as an umbrella. So it's drier under the tree, even a deciduous tree. But if you can do it yourself, fine, but otherwise an arborist might be able to lighten up the canopy in places. Or you pull the garden slightly away from the tree and go to the lovely bit that I call edge shade, which is often people have trees or shrubs around the edge of their property and then lawn in the middle. And that bit sort of where the canopy meets the lawn is a really good place to start shade gardening, because you get enough light for things to flower, but it's not too baking a sun. So that's a lot of information in a couple of sentences. But, you know, basically it's fun. It's fun, and, you know, a lot of people are finding out that it's very rewarding.
And I always say, yeah, there are certain plants that in the vegetable world that need a lot of sunlight. But if you look in the woods, there's a lot of plants that grow in shade or almost complete shade. So wherever your situation is, there's probably something that you can grow in your area.
Exactly. And also, you know, I'm a big proponent of native plants. So there's a wonderful website that the USDA puts out that you can look up plants that are your native to your area, or you go to your county extension or your state extension and look for plants that naturally live in your area, and they'll be very adapted. And then you can find the ones that like shade and the ones that like sun, and they've got much more of a hope of doing well in your situation. Plus, you're adding to your local ecosystem. So it's really a fun way to, I feel like it's giving back to your community of birds and insects and small mammals and things that live in your area.
Right. Now, I have to ask you about your dry garden on your property. On our show, we tell people how to water and keep things watered. What is a dry garden? What is that for you?
So basically, I have an old house from 1887 called Northview, and it's on a well. And when I had my three girls living here, it was I was running out of water. Well, actually, I had no outdoor taps when I first moved here 25 years ago. So, you know, basically, it was the watering can in the kitchen sink if I wanted to water something. So we had been on a trip to Provence in the south of France and seen that some of my favorite plants, like lavenders, were growing basically by the side of the road and with nobody caring for them and, you know, looking after them. And I'd been trying to grow lavender in my herb garden, and with very little success, because I think I was treating the lavender too nicely and watering it and giving it rich soil. And I sort of had an aha moment, because I realized that many of the things that I wanted to grow actually needed more like a rock garden type situation, where instead of a wood mulch or a leaf mold mulch, they needed stones, gravel, grit around the base of their crown, because they were getting too wet. And so it was sort of like a way of dealing with a bad situation, which was no extra water from the well, and really wanting to grow some things that were silver-leaved, like eryngiums and even some of the baptisias, which you might know. I can't remember the English name. But a lot of the things with deep roots that get their taproot down and really don't need additional water. And obviously that will vary from, you know, your listeners are over a wide area. So what you grow will, you know, again, vary by your area. But if you start looking for things that are adapted to drought, it's really a fun way of having a lower maintenance garden. I haven't watered that garden since 2004 when I put it in. I do water them in, but then after that, it's tough love, I call it.
Well, that's fantastic. So since you have garden in England and the United States, what are some major differences that you've noted between the two?
Well, I would say until this week, temperature, but I don't know if you've been following the news, but poor Europe and England and Wales and Scotland, are all roasting under the summer sun.
Record-breaking heat, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, it's probably to be expected as we go forward, but they're really not ready for it. My oldest daughter lives in London with her husband, and they have no air conditioning and no fans, so, you know, they're going to be really hot. So normally you would say, I'm just going to go back to the normal, that England is more temperate, whereas the vast majority of the continental USA is extreme cold and extreme hot. And I sort of joke that England, you know, spring starts in January and maybe finishes by about June. But, you know, they get a nice long spring and they're sort of like a cool zone 8. So when we all get garden envy of what the Brits can grow, and we're just like, oh, darn, why can't I grow that, you know, there is a reason that they can grow different things, because it doesn't get as hot and it doesn't get as cold. Having said that, I try, you know, having grown up in England, there are certain plants that I love to grow. So I try and figure out how to grow them in my my garden is zone 6-7, but you know, it's sort of I don't know. We have periods of drought. We have very cold weather every now and then. So it's just a bit of a challenge. But you know, roses, for example, they don't have the Japanese beetle there. I hope they never get them. You know, so it's just different pests, different things. You know, I love to travel and see them and try and get ideas from their gardens. So.
Great. So we are talking with Jenny Rose Carey, a renowned gardener, educator, historian, and author.
Now, you growing up in London, I'll ask this from a personal question. We see a lot of YouTubers, allotments, and the perception and what we've understood as Americans is not many people in that area have property to grow a garden on. That's why the allotments are there, and with the World War II and all that. Were you considered fortunate to have property in order to grow a garden, or how did that work for you?
Oh, when I was growing up, you mean?
Yes, yes.
We actually did have an allotment.
Okay.
I grew up in a little village called East Morling in Kent, and my grandparents were in the neighbouring village of Ditton. And we had a tiny little garden next to the house. And so we trundled our wheelbarrow down the hill and, you know, with all the tools in and everything like that. And as a kid, it was like uphill both ways, you know, and it was always steaming and hot, you know, as you were doing the weeding. No, we had an allotment, which is like a community garden. And, you know, we grew all our vegetables. My dad is still alive and he's still a very big vegetable grower. And he's always loved that. So, yeah, we did. We grew around the house. We had a little rockery with a pond made out of the old bathtub, and you know, there was one tree, a silver birch tree, and then all our vegetables were grown down the road. So yeah, that's what we did. You're right, it's still very much a thing, just because the way that they build houses even today is they're much closer together and clustered, and then the farmland is in between. So it's nucleated settlement, I suppose you'd call it.
So how do you pay homage to that historical property?
Oh, it's very interesting because it has Quaker roots. And for your listeners outside Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania was founded by William Penn, who was a Quaker. And his whole ethos was to provide religious freedom. And he was very respectful to the Lenape Native American people. And so, and also at the back of the property, there is a stop that was on the Underground Railroad. So I really like to always be respectful of the Lenape Native Americans who gardened this area and used it before the settlement of the Quakers, but also, you know, honor the Underground Railroad that came through this area. The Quakers are very fond of nature, and many of our public gardens in this area have Quaker roots. And that's a very bad pun, but they were founded by Quakers, gardened by Quakers. And I have the autobiography of Wilmer, that's W-I-L-M-E-R, the boy's name, not Wilmer with an A. I have a funny accent in case you didn't gather. But and his wife, Anna Atkinson. And coincidentally, they had three daughters the same as us. And in that autobiography, I have a quote up here. He said, "I made many journeys to inspect nurseries. I bought beautiful growing things for the adornment of our lawn." And we still have a few Wilmer trees on the property, a few less after the tornado came through with Hurricane Ida, I have to say, on the 1st of September, which was very, very sad. But I pay homage through the tours that I give, through the lectures that I give. So I feel like his spirit goes on. But I think probably by planting trees, because there's this great quote in his autobiography by I suppose she's a poet called Lucy Larcom, and it says, "He who plants a tree, he plants love, tents of coolness spreading out above. Wayfarers he may not live to see, gifts that grow are best, hands that bless are blessed, plant, life does the rest." And I just love that quote. It sends shivers down my spine, because I just really feel like the beautiful old trees that I have inherited in this garden were planted by Wilma and his co-workers, and I am the beneficiary. So I'm really always encouraging people to plant a tree and, you know, really take that respectful attitude towards their surroundings and nature in general.
Very, very good information, Jen. Jenny, we appreciate the time you've offered us. How can our listeners find out more about you and get your books?
Oh, well, thank you. I have a website that is my name, Jenny with a Y, Rose Carey, C-A-R-E-Y, .com. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, I love Instagram, and I post some reels and pictures of the garden and flowers. And that's at Northview Garden with one, just a garden, or at Jenny Rose Carey. And my two books, I have the Glorious Shade book, and then the newest one that came out about a few weeks ago is The Ultimate Flower Gardener's Guide. And they're both Timber Press, and they're available wherever good books are sold. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the garden and the books, and I hope that your listeners enjoy.
Well, you are very welcome, and we do thank you again for the time you've offered all of us and the wisdom you've shared.
Okay. Well, have a good day.
Absolutely.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.